from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson in This Week for Michael Krasny. Zika is now here, so said Florida Governor Rick Scott yesterday as news came that 10 more people had been infected with the virus in a Miami neighborhood. The discovery prompted the CDC to recommend that pregnant women avoid traveling to the area, the first time such a recommendation had been issued for a region within the continental U.S. We'll get the latest Zika news in our first half hour. And then we'll preview a documentary premiering tonight on KQED 9, The Boys of 36, based on the best-selling book The Boys in the Boat. The film tells the story of an unlikely group of underdogs who went on to win Olympic gold at the Berlin Olympics in 1936. Those stories ahead on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson in This Week for Michael Krasny. It wasn't unexpected, yet the news still carried a jolt. Zika had arrived in the United States, the first 14 cases of infection not linked to foreign travel. All 14 infections were discovered in the same Miami neighborhood, an arts district known as Wynwood, north of downtown. And it prompted the Center for Disease Control to urge pregnant women to avoid traveling to that neighborhood, the first time it has issued such a travel recommendation to an area within the continental United States. To get the latest on the significance of this development, we turn to Pam Bellick, who's covering the story for The New York Times, and to Dr. Charles Chu, professor of medicine at UCSF, who specializes in infectious disease. Pam Bellick, first, covering the story for The New York Times, any new developments today? Anything changed in the last 24 hours?
There hasn't been anything, any kind of update today. No new cases have been identified or at least announced so far. The only thing that is happening in Florida is that, as the CDC announced yesterday, they have sent in what is called a CERT team, an emergency response team, and there are eight members of that team that are gathering there in Florida. They're there or are arriving now, and they have a range of expertise from mosquito control to birth defects to epidemiology, and they're getting together with the Florida health officials to try to amp up the response.
One of the things that has been reported on in the last day or so is that this calls into question whether or not the mosquito control efforts that have been put forward to date have been effective. What can you tell us about that?
Right, and that was really kind of the most worrisome thing that was revealed yesterday. The reason why, the main reason why the CDC decided to say to issue this travel warning that pregnant women avoid this neighborhood was not that they found a few more cases, because they had been expecting that there would be additional cases. They've been going door to door testing people, and they continue to expect that they'll find more cases. But what was most worrisome was that after 2 or 3 weeks of really intensive mosquito control efforts in this neighborhood, they've found that has done not nearly as much as they had hoped to reduce the mosquito population there, the Aedes aegypti mosquito. And so they're trying to figure out why that is. And the possibilities include that this mosquito may be resistant to the two types of insecticide that have so far been used in that area. It's just also possible that this is a really tough neighborhood to try to do mosquito control, because you've got an urban neighborhood with a wide range of industrial and residential and gentrifying properties, and it's this is an urban mosquito. This is a mosquito that can hang out and thrive in just a tiny pocket of water, or, a bottle cap or a drain pipe or something like that. And so it's really difficult to find it everywhere that it might hide out.
Pam Bellick joining us, covering this story for The New York Times. Pam, stay with us. Let's bring Dr. Charles Chu into our conversation, professor of medicine specializing in infectious disease at UCSF. as Pam Bellick describes it, this seems like a particularly pesky kind of mosquito, making these eradication efforts so difficult. What more can you tell us about this? Why is it that this mosquito may be resistant to certain kinds of mosquito, certain kinds of insecticides? What are we learning so far that makes these eradication efforts so challenging?
Yeah, the Aedes mosquito is actually very difficult to control. Unlike, for instance, the more common kind of Culex mosquitoes, which are kind of the common, when you think, biting mosquitoes in the United States, these mosquitoes, for instance, can actually bite and infect people throughout the day. So the advice that we commonly give for mosquito bites, where you sort of avoid kind of dawn and dusk periods, doesn't really apply to this mosquito. Especially when this mosquito becomes entrenched in urban environments, it can also be quite aggressive with respect to infecting and biting humans. So it certainly can be a very difficult mosquito to control.
Now, what does it actually mean in terms of this, the significance of this fact that we now have infections that are happening within the continental United States? To date, the infections that are here in the continental United States have happened because of foreign travel. How significant should we take this news that now we have infectious mosquitoes that are spreading the disease within the borders of this country?
I don't think it's necessarily a cause for alarm. It certainly is a reason why we should be concerned. I would say that this is something that has not been unexpected. We knew all along that, you know, Florida, Texas, the Gulf states, kind of coastal regions of the United States, they have the environment and the weather is very similar to other areas in South America, Central America, and the Caribbean, where we already know that this epidemic is raging. So the fact that now we're starting to see cases, you know, beginning in mosquito season in the summer months, is really not unexpected. It is, however, I think, a wake-up call that really that more intense eradication efforts are really needed to control the mosquito, as well as surveillance efforts to really figure out where is this mosquito moving and where is the virus moving.
Pam Bellick, in Miami, what's going on right now as far as those efforts to try to track what's going on? Is there a widespread sense of concern, or are there efforts in place to try to reassure the population, whether that's in this particular neighborhood or in South Florida in general?
You know, it's been interesting, and I have not been in Florida yet. We've had a couple of colleagues reporting there yesterday, and they've been to the Wynwood neighborhood. And one thing that is kind of interesting is that there hasn't been very much alarm or panic, which in some ways is good. But in some ways, the people who need to be most concerned, young women who might be considering getting pregnant or might be pregnant, probably should be a bit more concerned than they seem to be saying that they are. And I think that's what CDC and Florida health officials are sort of trying to communicate by putting this neighborhood on the map, you know, showing people these are the boundaries, this is the 1 mile square area that they need to be concerned about, and now sort of stepping it up and saying, you know, pregnant women shouldn't go there. This is such an odd kind of virus because for the vast majority of people, it either causes no symptoms or very mild symptoms, but the one place where it does or can have a devastating effect is in the, you know, the fetuses of women who are infected. So they're trying to, I think, kind of sort of stratify that situation by saying, you know, there's not cause for global alarm, but for if you're in that situation where you might be pregnant or are pregnant, you should avoid the one area where we have found traced all of these cases so far to.
Let's review what the recommendations are, Dr. Chu, and get your sense of whether those seem appropriate at this point, which is to the CDC is saying that women, pregnant women, should not travel to this particular area, and that women who are in this area should, if you are pregnant, then you should get tested, and that if you've been in this area, you should wait to get pregnant for a period of time. Do all those recommendations make sense to you, and that they are limited in nature? They're not saying if you've been in Miami, if you've been in South Florida, that they're limiting it to this one particular neighborhood. Does that seem like the reasonable and appropriate response to you at this point?
I think that the response is of the CDC and the CDC guidelines and recommendations are reasonable in the sense that this is simply an extension of pregnant women who may be returning travelers from say countries you know, such as Brazil, where the virus is endemic. I mean, essentially, what has happened now is that a small community, a small area in Florida, is now considered an area of what we call local transmission, meaning that pregnant women must take the same precautions that they would take if they, for instance, travel to endemic countries such as Brazil. And the recommendations are of the CDC are that women who are thinking of becoming pregnant or who are pregnant avoid travel to those regions.
And again, to make clear what these recommendations are, let's review them one by one. If you're pregnant, don't go to that area. If you're thinking about being pregnant and you've been in that area, you should wait 8 weeks. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And if you're already pregnant and you've been in that area, you should get tested.
That is correct. That is correct.
And let's talk about testing for a moment, because this is an area of your particular interest and research. That's been a real dilemma because there isn't to date. Testing is not something that can be done quickly. Bring us up to date on where testing stands and where you hope it will soon be able to go.
Yeah, testing is still problematic for Zika virus. One is that there are two modalities or two types of testing. The first kind of testing is where you directly look for the virus. It's basically what we call a nucleic acid test. We look for RNA from that virus. You know, unfortunately, as Pam mentioned, over 80% of cases of people infected with Zika virus have no symptoms whatsoever. And this test is really only useful, the test looking for the virus itself is only useful within the first week after a patient develops symptoms. Afterwards, we do what is typically done is there's an antibody test that looks for an antibodies against the virus in case that you have been infected. The problem with that, that test can be nonspecific. You may be infected by a related mosquito-borne virus like dengue virus that may cross-react with that antibody. So in short, testing is still not optimal for Zika virus. However, the testing, there have been improvements in testing. The FDA has also fast-tracked many tests, and now there are tests that have emergency use. They've been approved for emergency use for testing for Zika virus. And the recommendation is that women who are pregnant should get promptly tested if they have been in, traveling to a country that whether it's transmission or now to this area, if they've been in that area or traveled to that area.
And those emergency tests that can give you more prompt results are available now?
These tests have they're called emergency tests because they've been approved by been fast tracked by the Food and Drug Administration FDA, so they've been approved for testing, and they are able to test for Zika virus and test whether a patient has been exposed or a person has been exposed to Zika virus.
We want to take your calls and answer your questions on this topic. Pam Bellick joins us from the New York Times. Dr. Charles Chu from UCSF. You can get your questions to them at 866-733-6786. Email your questions at forum@kqed.org. That's forum@kqed.org. Pam Bellick, there's been some concern that others have raised about the nature of the CDC proposals so far. Some saying that they should be more widespread, that the area of notice should go broader than just the one area of North Miami. What's your reporting? Where is your reporting gone with that today? Is the CDC holding fast to just restricting the warning to that one neighborhood, or do you think that may get expanded further?
Well, at the moment, they are focusing just on that neighborhood, and I think you know people. I think it's important, and I'm sure Dr. Chu can weigh in here as well, to sort of understand what public health officials think of when they are trying to figure out how to confront a situation like this. So they, on the one hand, what they have done, Florida health officials and with the CDC's help, is that they've been tracking cases and testing people for possible locally transmitted infection for several weeks now. And they've not just focused on this area. They've focused on some other areas in Broward and Miami-Dade County. And so far, they have ruled out or have not found any other areas to be a place where they've noticed local transmission. So far, every case that they have found has been somehow linked to this 150-meter or sort of 1 mile square is kind of a generous, perimeter area in Wynwood. And it does seem to most people seem to have some connection to two work sites in that area. And they just keep, that's what they're finding. So that's what they're focusing on in terms of where they're telling people to stay away, in terms of, what they are now branding as an area of local transmission. They just haven't found any other areas like that. They do continue to look. And when they think about what kind of messages to send out, if they were to say, for example, as some people, are calling, well, they should tell people, pregnant women not to go to Miami or not to go to South Florida. Well, think about that. What happens to if they don't have evidence to back up that kind of restriction? What happens to the pregnant women who are already living in Miami and who are already living in South Florida? Where do they go? Are we moving them out somewhere? Who's paying for that? Are we disrupting their lives, their families, their workplaces? These types of restrictions can have huge ripple effects on people's daily lives. And so if you're a public health official, you want to be sure that you are doing what needs to be done, but not going beyond that to both because of the actual practical disruption it might have and because of the panic it could cause.
Let's take a couple of calls from our listeners this morning. Kimberly in Palo Alto gets us started. Kimberly, go ahead, please.
Yeah, my question is similar. I have thank you for taking my call. I have a question about why we are not testing women who want to become pregnant before they become pregnant, so that they don't have to suffer through, the horribleness of deciding whether to terminate because possibly your baby has Zika. I just wonder why we aren't doing that. And then also the idea of if the disease is transmitted from one person to another, why we aren't just, transmitting it back and forth for infinity. Thanks.
So, Dr. Chu, testing before you become pregnant, and then the question of how common a concern it is about sexual transmission of the disease.
Yes, so testing before a woman becomes pregnant can be problematic, and there are a couple of reasons why. One is that as I said before, the test for Zika can be nonspecific. So, for instance, you may have gone traveling to a country where there's dengue virus. You may have been infected with dengue virus sometime in your life, and you may actually have a false positive. And so there's a big concern about universal testing of, say, all women who may become pregnant because we don't really know. We don't have the resources or the way to know how to treat a positive and whether or not it's a real positive or not. And similarly, it would be very difficult to provide guidance. It's simply a lack of resources and the fact that the tests themselves are have some issues.
And we've been talking so far, of course, about the possibilities of the transmission of this disease taking place by way of mosquitoes. But it is also true that this disease can be sexually transmitted.
That is true. There have now been several cases of documented sexual transmission, mostly male to female sexual transmission, but there is also female to male that have now been described. There have been some cases that have been reported. So certainly this is something to consider. Not only women who are pregnant or want to become pregnant, but also their partners.
And one other area where I think there can be confusion is that the mosquito that is the mosquito that can carry this particular disease, the Aedes aegypti mosquito, is in California. It's in many places. It's just that in California currently, we haven't found the mosquito that's actually carrying the disease or has infected someone yet, right? So it's a little bit confusing as to whether or not we should be worried because that particular mosquito is actually in the state.
That is true. The state has regular public health surveillance efforts, and that not involves not only surveying surveillance of people who have febrile illness or fever, but also surveying mosquitoes. And we have essentially a mosquito surveillance effort that looks for Zika virus and other potential disease agents that are carried by mosquitoes. And there has been, even though we have the mosquito that can harbor the virus in California, there's been so far no evidence that the virus is actually in the mosquitoes, at least at present.
So the mosquito that carries the virus can be here. It's just that we don't have mosquitoes that actually have the virus.
That is true. The mosquito that carries the virus is here in California, although so far all of the surveillance of mosquitoes have not found the virus in those mosquitoes in California.
And to Stuart in San Francisco. Stuart, your question, please.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm just curious about a mosquito. There are certain types of mosquitoes that can carry the virus. What I wonder about is what happens to the mosquito and what happens to the virus when one of those other kinds of mosquitoes do bite somebody who is infected.
Not sure I quite follow. Say again,
so,
please.
One of the mosquitoes that doesn't carry the virus, you know, the other kinds of mosquitoes, when that bites an infected person.
Okay, got it.
What happens to the mosquito and the virus?
Got it. Dr. Chu?
That's a very interesting question. So far, it's only been shown that the Aedes mosquito can transmit Zika virus. However, the more common kind of what we call the household mosquito, the Culex mosquitoes, there actually was a very recent report in Brazil which actually reported that the Culex mosquitoes can actually harbor the virus. Now, however, there so far has been no evidence whatsoever to suggest that the Culex mosquitoes can actually transmit the disease to someone else that's infected. So it really appears to be the Aedes mosquito appears to be a primary vector of transmitting this disease.
Pam Belloc, we just have a moment left, but just give us a sort of sense of what you're going to be and your colleagues at the New York Times are going to be watching for in the days ahead and as the story develops in Florida.
Right. We're going to be looking at what steps CDC in conjunction with Florida Health Department is taking on the ground, how they're stepping up their efforts to improve mosquito control, and how they're tracking the cases and looking for possible other cases of local transmission.
Pam Belloc, thanks so much for joining us. And Dr. Charles Chu, bring us up to date very briefly, if you would, please, on your testing device and whether or not that will be made useful for the upcoming games in Brazil.
Well, we're developing a testing device that we're deploying in Brazil and in the Caribbean, as well as in Mexico. And the goal of it is really not only to identify Zika, but identify other febrile illnesses. It's been actually thought that Zika was around circulating in Brazil for over 8 months before it was initially detected. And it's our hope that by having a device at this, that we can be able to be prepared for the next emerging outbreak.
Dr. Charles Chu at UCSF, thanks so much for bringing your expertise to our program this morning and for the work you're doing to try to combat this public health threat. Thanks for your work in this arena. When we continue in our next half hour, we'll take up a very different topic. We'll take up a new documentary that's premiering tonight on KQED Television 9 about a story about the Olympics, but a different Olympics, the Olympics of 1936. We'll take that up when we return. This is Forum on KQED.